this on. Thank you. Every committee room's different, so excuse me. Welcome, everybody, to our call to order here for Tuesday, February 11th. The chair calls the Education Policy Committee to order. Excuse me. Got a frog in my throat. Members, we have a big agenda today, so we're actually going to hold off on member introductions because I do want to hear from everybody on that, but we're going to wait until our next meeting for member and staff introductions, being we have some guest presenters and we want to leave as much time as we can for that. Today we're going to, first of all, we do have a quorum, correct? So we're A-okay on that. Quorum is present. So we have a big agenda. We are going to hear a presentation by the Office of Legislative Auditor, and it will be on MDE's oversight of feeding our future. This report was released in June of 2024, but it has not yet been heard in either the House Education Policy Committee or the House Finance Committee. Since this committee has primary jurisdiction over the Minnesota Department of Education, I felt it necessary and appropriate to hear this report and to hear it soon so that we can work together with MDE, with our members here, to oversee the situation and find solutions for the fraud and waste that we've been seeing. So after the legislative auditor gives their presentation, there will be opportunity for member questions. So members, if you would just write down your questions if you have them, we will wait until after the presentation for that. I have also invited the Commissioner of Education to provide any comments that he would like to make, and I'm sure the Commissioner will take questions as well. Before we begin with the OLA, I'd like to make a few brief comments, and I've got them written down here so I don't forget. First of all, just some background, the Feeding Our Future fraud scheme has been described by federal authorities as one of the largest pandemic-related scams in the country. This criminal endeavor exceeded $250 million and up to 70 defendants, ranging across both for-profit and nonprofit enterprises. It's significant. The fraud took advantage of the generosity of taxpayers during a national emergency. The scheme involved federal nutrition aid for the summer food service program and the child and adult care food program, serving children from low-income households and vulnerable adults. So it not only takes away from our taxpayers, but it takes away from the people who truly need the help, which is a big reason why we want to get this problem figured out. I just want to point out that the scheme here did not involve our school nutrition programs or school nutrition staff. I also want to point out that while we are examining how MDE as an agency could have better managed their regulatory authority and obligations, no one at the agency has been accused of criminal wrongdoing, nor are we accusing that in here. So that's important to note. I also would like to note that Commissioner Jett was appointed commissioner after the events of Feeding Our Future. And in addition, we understand the commissioner may not be in a position to answer every question today, so we will welcome a written response to any question that's not able to be addressed. So, thank you, Ms. Randall, for your patience, and please proceed with your presentation after you introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. For the record, my name is Judy Randall, Legislative Auditor, and thank you for making time today to hear our report on MDE's oversight of Feeding Our Future. As Chair Bennett said, we released this report in June of 24, and as she very, very well summarized, as you know, the federal government has alleged that Feeding Our Future was at the center of a scheme intended to defraud federal child nutrition programs. And as you all know, there have been trials, and trials are ongoing related to that alleged fraud. So rather than investigate the alleged criminal activity, that's not what OLA does, our work focused instead on the state's oversight of Feeding Our Future. More specifically, we focused on the Minnesota Department of Education, which is the state agency responsible for overseeing child nutrition programs in Minnesota, and it was the state agency responsible for overseeing Feeding Our Future. Now, when bad actors collude with the intent to commit fraud, the fraud can be very difficult to discover and it can be very difficult to stop. The best defense against fraud is effective oversight and strong internal controls. Taken together, good oversight and strong internal controls make it difficult, not impossible, but difficult for bad actors to commit fraud. This is why OLA focuses so much attention on internal controls and oversight processes. Again, they're the best defense mechanism state agencies have to ensure that public funds are being used as intended and to protect against fraud. Bad actors will look for gaps in oversight, try to identify loopholes, and identify opportunities to commit fraud. It's the responsibility of state agencies to limit those opportunities. As you will hear from Ms. Tyson, we found that the Minnesota Department of Education provided inadequate oversight of Feeding Our Future. You'll hear several examples of instances, including times from before 2020 and from before the start of the COVID-19 pandemic, where MDE provided inadequate oversight and created opportunities for Feeding Our Future to commit fraud. Time and time again, throughout the 4 years that it participated in the child nutrition programs, MDE missed opportunities to hold Feeding Our Future accountable. So to get into those details of the missed opportunities and to present our key findings and recommendations, I would like to now turn to Ms. Tyson, who is OLA's Director of Special Reviews. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Excuse me, go ahead and proceed. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. For the record, my name is Catherine Tyson, and I'm OLA's Special Reviews Director. As Ms. Randall just said, I will be presenting our findings and recommendations from our June 2024 review, Minnesota Department of Education Oversight of Feeding Our Future. Between September 2022 and February 2024, the U.S. Department of Justice charged 70 individuals with various financial crimes related to their suspected roles in an alleged $250 million fraud scheme. The defendants allegedly exploited two federally funded nutrition programs during the COVID-19 pandemic, and according to the federal government, the scheme centered on a Minnesota nonprofit organization called Feeding Our Future. Until early 2022, Feeding Our Future was a sponsor in two federal nutrition programs, the Child and Adult Care Food Program, or CACFP, and the Summer Food Service Program, SFSP. CACFP provides reimbursements for meals and snacks served to eligible children and adults who are enrolled at participating child care centers, after school care programs, and adult daycare centers, among other locations. Generally, CACFP operates year-round. SFSP provides reimbursements for meals and snacks served to eligible children and teens at locations like summer camps that are in low-income areas, and SFSP typically operates during the summer months when students are not at school or during unexpected school closures. In CACFP and SFSP, food is served to eligible children and adults at places called sites. Sites are responsible for verifying eligibility of participants, serving those meals and snacks, and counting the number of meals and snacks served, among other things. CACFP and SFSP sites may prepare food themselves or contract with outside vendors to provide that food. Sponsors are responsible for overseeing sites, including monitoring their sites for compliance with program requirements, and they're responsible for training staff, receiving sites reimbursement claims, and distributing reimbursements, among other things. Sponsors retain a percentage of the reimbursements to cover costs of providing these services and monitoring sites, among other responsibilities. State agencies are responsible for overseeing sponsors' compliance with applicable federal and state laws through ongoing monitoring, training, and technical assistance. State agencies are also responsible for reviewing and approving claims for reimbursement and making payments to sponsors for valid claims. Finally, the United States Department of Agriculture, or USDA, is responsible for overseeing state agencies' administration of these two programs, as well as reimbursing state agencies for valid claims. Among other things, USDA also writes federal rules for the programs and evaluates state agency performance. We concluded that MDE's oversight of Feeding Our Future was inadequate, and frankly, we thought that its inadequate oversight created opportunities for fraud. In our review, we identified numerous instances when MDE did not provide adequate oversight, especially given the information it had in its possession or should have obtained but did not. These instances span all of MDE's key oversight mechanisms, and they span the nearly 4 years, so 2018 to 2022, during which Feeding Our Future received public funds to administer nutrition programs. Today, I'm going to be presenting select findings related to three key themes. So first, MDE failed to act on warning signs known to the department prior to the onset of the COVID-19 pandemic. Second, that MDE did not effectively exercise its authority to hold Feeding Our Future accountable to program requirements. And third, that MDE was ill-prepared to respond to issues it encountered with Feeding Our Future. So starting on that first theme, Feeding Our Future began operating as a sponsor in CACFP in August of 2018. Later in 2020, MDE approved Feeding Our Future as a sponsor in the Summer Food Service, or SFSP, program, and it began operating in June of that year. Between 2018 and 2021, Feeding Our Future's operation grew at a significant rate, especially in the years following the beginning of the COVID-19 pandemic. At its peak, MDE paid Feeding Our Future nearly $32 million for 12 million meals and snacks the organization purportedly served in April 2021 alone. This was 87 times more than what MDE paid Feeding Our Future in April 2020. Compared to other sponsors, Feeding Our Future was an outlier both before and after the pandemic in terms of the number of sites under its sponsorship and in the amount of reimbursements it received. By October of 2019, so pre-pandemic, Feeding Our Future already had more than six times the number of CACFP sites than the average multi-site sponsor. So at this time, Feeding Our Future had 73 CACFP sites, while the average multi-site sponsor had 12. Then, due to the COVID-19 pandemic, the amount of federal funds MDE distributed to all CACFP sponsors increased by nearly 400% from fiscal year 2020 to fiscal year 2021. However, the total funds received by Feeding Our Future increased by roughly 2,800% between those 2 years. Then in fiscal year 2021, roughly $4 out of every $10 distributed to CACFP and SFSP nonprofit sponsors in Minnesota went to Feeding Our Future. On top of all of that, by the start of the pandemic in March 2020, MDE had reason to be concerned about Feeding Our Future's compliance with program regulations. In December 2018, MDE conducted an administrative review of Feeding Our Future's CACFP operations. Many of MDE's findings, which we describe in Exhibit 3.3 on pages 38 through 40 of the report, related to issues that increase the risk of fraud. For example, MDE found that one or more of the four sites included in the review had incorrectly inflated average daily attendance and claimed unallowable food service expenses, among other things. In addition to MDE's findings at Feeding Our Future sites, several other findings indicated deficiencies in the ability of the organization to manage its CACFP program. For example, MDE found that Feeding Our Future had failed to ensure that the sites under its responsibility took actions to correct issues Feeding Our Future had identified, and MDE also found that Feeding Our Future had improperly verified meal claims from sites. While a follow-up review was warranted in this case, MDE did not conduct one. Despite signs that Feeding Our Future might not be in full compliance with program requirements, MDE did not effectively exercise its authority to hold the organization accountable to program requirements both before and after the start of the pandemic. Let's first touch on MDE's key oversight responsibilities. Two key activities which are listed on the screen are application and administrative reviews. In Minnesota, sponsors apply annually to participate in CACFP and SFSP. MDE uses information submitted in the sponsors' applications to determine the eligibility of new and renewing sponsors, the reasonableness of their budgets, and the capability of sponsors to meet financial and operational standards set out in program regulations. Administrative reviews involve periodic, in-depth monitoring of sponsors. These include visits to a percentage of the sponsor's sites, observations of meals and snacks, and reviews of the sponsor's records like meal claims, financial records, and documentation of the sponsor's monitoring of its sites. Another key oversight responsibility is investigating complaints and irregularities in CACFP and SFSP. In addition to requiring MDE to conduct investigations, federal regulations require the department to take appropriate actions to correct irregularities. Complementary federal regulations give MDE the authority to request a wide array of records from sponsors. Finally, MDE must initiate an administrative serious deficiency process when it identifies serious issues with sponsors' operations. Serious deficiencies including submitting false information on the sponsor's application, failing to properly monitor sites, claiming reimbursements for meals and snacks not served, etc. Sponsors must correct the deficiency MDEs identified, and if they do not, MDE must terminate the sponsor's participation in the program. We found that MDE repeatedly approved Feeding Our Futures annual applications despite identifying serious concerns about the organization's ability to administer CACFP and SFSP. We also found that MDE did not appropriately investigate complaints it received involving Feeding Our Future. And we also found that MDE did not verify information received prior to approving annual applications, closing investigations, or deferring serious deficiencies. And I'll be providing examples of each of these three findings on the following slides. As I mentioned a couple slides ago, federal regulations require MDE to deny a sponsor's application if it does not meet certain performance standards in regulation. MDE missed opportunities to hold Feeding Our Future accountable to these standards when it approved several applications. One of the applications that we believe MDE could have denied was Feeding Our Future sponsor application for the 2021 CACFP program year, which MDE approved in October of 2020. As Exhibit 3.1 on pages 26 to 27 show, MDE raised a number of concerns when reviewing the application, many of which pertained directly to the extent to which the organization met CAC performance standards as specified in federal regulations. For example, MDE noted that Feeding Our Futures application did not adequately document financial internal controls, that's a requirement under federal law. Further, MDE found that the organization lacked dedicated financial or accounting staff. This was a repeat concern by this point of time and one that we think was reasonable given the size of Feeding Our Futures operations. In its application review, MDE noted the lack of financial staff undermined internal controls related to fiscal integrity and prevented a reasonable separation of duties for an organization of Feeding Our Future size. Prior to approving the application, MDE requested information on how Feeding Our Future managed its finances and internal controls. Feeding Our Future did not provide this information to MDE, but MDE approved the application anyway. Moving on to complaint investigations. I mentioned earlier that federal regulations require MDE to promptly investigate complaints received or irregularities noted in connection with CACFP and SFSP, and then take appropriate action to correct any irregularities. Between June 2018 and December 2021, MDE received at least 30 complaints, including allegations that Feeding Our Future used unethical or inappropriate methods to recruit sites, operated sites at locations without the property owner's permission, and then at those locations ran messy and haphazard food distribution sites, and MDE received complaints that Feeding Our Future had demanded kickback payments from vendors to serve food at the sites. However, we found that MDE did not investigate some complaints about Feeding Our Future, despite the complaint's seriousness. And when MDE decided to investigate complaints about Feeding Our Future, the investigations were inadequate. We also found that MDE inappropriately asked Feeding Our Future to investigate complaints about itself. One example, in August of 2021, MDE received conflicting reports of inappropriate or illegal behavior by Feeding Our Future, a site, and a vendor. To get really specific, one of Feeding Our Future's sites contacted MDE alleging that Feeding Our Future had not paid its food vendor. The vendor told MDE that Feeding Our Future had demanded a kickback, and when the vendor refused to pay, Feeding Our Future canceled the vendor's contract in retaliation. According to the site, the new vendor Feeding Our Future assigned to that site had delivered an insufficient number of meals, many of which violated food safety and dietary requirements. And then in separate communication with MDE, Feeding Our Future stated it wanted to take administrative action against the site for submitting fraudulent claims, soliciting a kickback from its former vendor, and making a false complaint to MDE about its new vendor, among other serious allegations. Rather than initiating a full independent investigation into Feeding Our Future or the sites and vendors involved, MDE referred the site and the site's original vendor's complaint to Feeding Our Future for resolution. We did not see any evidence that MDE took independent investigatory steps, like reviewing records or conducting a site visit, to ensure that kids were fed and that the food was nutritious and safe. The U.S. Department of Justice later charged the executive director of the organization operating the site and the owners of both vendors named in the complaint in the alleged fraud scheme. The site operator pled guilty to criminal wire fraud charges in January of 2024. MDE declared Feeding Our Future seriously deficient on two occasions. The first set of serious deficiencies, which MDE issued in January of 2021, apologies with the weirdness on the slide, that first serious deficiency was related to the revocation of Feeding Our Future's nonprofit status by the Internal Revenue Service, or IRS, as well as Feeding Our Future's failure to submit an audit of its financial statements and internal controls. When MDE notified Feeding Our Future of serious deficiencies in CACFP for a second time in March of 2021, these same two issues were included as part of larger concerns about Feeding Our Future's compliance with performance standards related to financial management, administrative capabilities, and program accountability. By June of 2021, MDE had deferred all of Feeding Our Future serious deficiencies, and the organization continued to operate as a sponsor for CACFP and SFSP. As we further explain in Chapter 5 of the report, MDE deferred the serious deficiencies without collecting sufficient evidence that the organization had fully and permanently addressed the serious deficiencies MDE identified. For example, MDE discontinued the process it had started to terminate Feeding Our Future as a sponsor in CACFP, because in May of 2021, the organization submitted an audit of its use of federal funds. But had MDE reviewed the audit documentation, which it had the authority to do, it would have likely discovered that the audit did not meet basic requirements. And in the report, we say frankly that it should not be considered an audit. As a second example, documents MDE collected from Feeding Our Future to validate meal claims while it was seriously deficient contained indications of the alleged fraud. However, MDE approved all meal claims without investigating irregularities that were evident in this documentation. We saw things like attendance records in the files that showed significantly more or fewer kids in attendance than the meals and snacks served. Like, for example, we saw an issue or one case where there was 1,000 kids on a list for attendance, but the site was claiming 2,500 meals per day. We also saw inappropriate ages of children based on the classroom for which they were assigned, so like a 13-year-old in a preschool classroom, a 9-year-old in an infant classroom. We also saw many menus that did not show what the sites actually served, another requirement under federal law for sponsors and sites. Finally, we concluded that the findings in our report were symptoms of a department that was ill-prepared to respond to the issues it encountered with Feeding Our Future. When we questioned its oversight of Feeding Our Future, MDE officials told us that many things prevented the department from acting on concerns that it had about Feeding Our Future, including operational challenges caused by the COVID-19 pandemic-related waivers, a lack of written clear guidance from USDA, and a lack of state rulemaking authority. But to these three points, we concluded that it was MDE's choices that made COVID-19 pandemic-related waivers a source of reduced oversight, not the waivers themselves. We think that the flexibility the waivers gave MDE regarding how and when it monitored program participants should have made it easier to focus on high-risk sponsors, like Feeding Our Future, and it should have made it easier to do that. We also concluded that MDE had the authority to take the steps to address issues that it identified and then we identified in this report with Feeding Our Future, regardless of any lack of detail in USDA guidance. And to the extent that MDE believed that additional regulatory authority could have strengthened its ability to take these actions, MDE has an obligation under state law to seek legislative action to obtain that authority. And in 2017, the Minnesota Court of Appeals put MDE on notice that it needed to codify certain procedures for CACFP and state administrative rules, but MDE neither requested changes to statutes nor pursued rulemaking authority. As you can imagine, we have a number of recommendations. The first I'm highlighting now is our recommendation to the legislature. We recommend the legislature establish criteria and statute or give MDE the authority to conduct rulemaking to establish specific application criteria. I'll note here that the 2023 legislature established some criteria, but these criteria relate to only one of three CACFP performance standards, so there's room for improvement. We also recommend that MDE take additional steps to verify information sponsors provided in support of sponsorship applications and in response to corrective action plans resulting from administrative reviews and the serious deficiency process. We think that MDE should target this additional effort to high-risk sponsors. We recommended that MDE place a greater emphasis on program integrity and risk-based monitoring if oversight requirements are waived again in the future. And related to complaints, we recommended that MDE revise its complaint investigation procedures, prioritize independent fact-finding, limit the information it shares with the subject of the complaint, and then evaluate recent statutory changes related to its investigatory authority. And that's related to changes that the 2024 legislature made to statutes pertaining to the MDE Office of Inspector General. So, what has been done since this report has been released, or was released in June? As part of a broader OLA effort to follow up on past recommendations, in December, we asked MDE to report to us the extent to which it had implemented the recommendations in these reports. We also asked MDE to supply supporting documentation, like agency policies and templates, and then we assessed MDE's actions to determine whether it had implemented, partially implemented, or not implemented each recommendation. So in some cases, we couldn't confirm just from the documentation provided that MDE had implemented recommendations. You know, in these cases, we have made the determination that we would need to go and conduct a larger file review or some kind of in-depth audit and evaluation methods in order to confirm, and we just don't have the resources to do that at this point. But as I've listed on this screen, MDE has made progress towards all eight of the recommendations we made to them. I've listed out the different categories, and I could certainly talk about them in more detail if there are questions. I will note that there is one recommendation to the legislature. You know, we haven't had a session since this report was released, so it has not yet been addressed. So with that, Madam Chair, that concludes my remarks, and I'd be happy to take questions.
Thank you so much for that report. And members, so we're now open for member questions or discussion. Do we have anybody? Representative Jordan, sorry. Thank you,
Madam Chair. And I am going to ask a question of Ms. Para. My understanding is that there are actions that are happening in courtrooms right now related to this. And so it is important that as government we are taking our responsibility seriously. seriously to not impact those trial, like any other legal proceedings that are happening at any moment. I mean, for example, during the trial of Derek Chauvin, the city of Minneapolis reached a settlement with the family of George Floyd. And as a result, there were jurors that had to be dismissed because that action that that government did, because it was in the news, had an impact on that trial. I wouldn't want this proceeding. I know people are watching. I've had many people reach out with concerns about this to have an impact on this. We know that fraud is bad. It is something that we cannot tolerate as the government of Minnesota. But I'm wondering, Ms. Parra, if you have advice as we proceed with questions to not impact any other legal proceedings that are happening simultaneously with this hearing that we're having.
Ms. Parra?
Thank you, Chair Bennett, members, Representative Jordan. with the caveat that I don't practice criminal law and never have, our general guidance is for policymakers to focus on the current practices and any information relevant to developing policy rather than any factual findings that would be within the jurisdiction of the court.
So, Representative Jordan, follow up? Okay, thank you. Representative Bierman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just wanted to follow up on the last point that you made, Ms. Tyson, regarding the 8 areas of improvement, and you indicated you could give us a little more detail on that, if you would. That would be appreciated. Thank you.
Go ahead and proceed. Thank you.
Madam Chair, Representative Bierman, sure. Bear with me while I'm going to read through them. So we have one recommendation that MDE should take additional steps to verify information provided in support of sponsorship applications submitted by high-risk applicants. This is one that's partially implemented. MDE had reported to us that it has made several changes in the sponsor application review process to verify unusual or unexpected information. You know, MDE provided kind of a procedure to support that, but this is one of those areas to determine whether that procedure is being followed as the recommendation is pointed towards. We would need to review a sample of and kind of dig deep into those reviews. Okay, next one on my list. MDE should conduct follow-up reviews as needed to ensure sponsors fully implement corrective action plans resulting from administrative reviews. This is one where we determined that it was implemented, but additional work is needed to confirm. Again, MDE reports to us and provided some information that it was conducting follow-up reviews, but again, like in order to be able to verify, you know, we're a trust but verify shop, we would want to conduct some additional work there. Next, MDE should place a greater emphasis on program integrity and risk-based monitoring if oversight requirements are waived again in the future. This is another in the partially implemented, but additional work needed to confirm category. Again, MDE reported that it addressed some of the aspects of this recommendation and provided to us a copy of a couple of waivers. This recommendation is, you know, in order to determine if they've implemented it, we would want to do some additional work and see if those additional oversight requirements are being addressed. Okay, next one. MDE should revise its CACFP and SFSP program complaint investigation procedures. And I won't read the whole thing, but we have several parts of that recommendation. This one we know is partially implemented, and we don't have the additional work needed to confirm TAG on this one because MDE is in the process of drafting complaint investigation procedures. This one was really easy to verify that they are well on their way to implementing that recommendation. MDE should prioritize independent fact-finding in response to complaints. Partially implemented, additional work needed to confirm. They're in the process of drafting the procedures. We would need to do some additional work to confirm. Next, MDE should limit the information it shares with the subject of the complainant or complaint to, in an effort to protect complainants from retaliation. Again, in the process of drafting procedures, we would need to do additional work in order to confirm that that's happening as part of investigations. Number 7, MDE should evaluate the
implementation of recent statutory changes related to its investigatory authority and proposed changes to the legislature. This report was released in June. MD hasn't had the opportunity to address the legislature during session, and so this one is not applicable as the category we have in our update report for this. Finally, number 8, MDE should conduct more active follow-up to ensure sponsors and sites fully implement corrective action plans that result from the serious deficiency process. This one we say is implemented, but additional work needed to confirm. MDE has reported that it has made changes to address the recommendation. Again, in order to verify the recommendation, we would need to do some additional work. Yeah, and if you want to see a full list of the report or the recommendations of the report, it's on page 77 of the report, and then in the slide deck, I have linked this broader update, which contains our assessment of how many state agencies have implemented recommendations that we made in 2022 to 2024 for many program evaluations and special reviews.
Madam Chair.
Bierman, follow-up?
One follow-up, a quick one.
Sure.
Please.
Go ahead, Representative.
Thank you. Thank you for that detail. And then, so my question is, you know, I'm somewhat familiar with OLA over the years, looked at some of the reports, and just wondered, is this ongoing for you in follow-up, or when does your focus on this issue, when do you close it out?
Ms. Dyson?
Madam Chair, Representative Bierman, this audit is complete. We have released the report. The ongoing work that I'm referencing here is part of a broader effort for us to be able to provide useful information to the legislature, and so that's kind of what drives this report. Do you want to speak to anything else?
Ms. Randall, do you want to add?
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Bierman. I would echo what Director Tyson said. We are basically done. You know, we are not continuing to look at the department's oversight of these child nutrition programs. We do a kind of once a year follow up to see the status of recommendations that we have made, and it's kind of a real quick. We send information out to the agencies, say where, you know, have you implemented any of these, and we ask for evidence to show that they've implemented it. And that's kind of, it's a very limited engagement in that regard. So I would say we are done with the work in this area for now.
Okay. Representative Bierman?
Just one last question again. So that last segment where you do one last quick look at it, is there a report to the legislature on that as well?
Ms. Randall?
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Bierman. Yes, it is the report that Director Tyson referenced. It is linked in the slide deck, and we sent out we sent it out by email to all members. But I have heard from almost every member that they haven't seen it, so we have to think of a better distribution method. I'd be happy to provide you a copy if you'd like, Representative.
Thank you,
Bierman?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yep, thank you for that. Any other members that comments? Questions? Representative Hill.
Thank you, Chair. Just a quick question here. What results has MDE seen or do your report show from the creation of the Office of Inspector General? And do they have the tools they need to be effective in that office?
Ms. Dyson, are you the one that wants to take this one?
Sure, okay. Madam Chair. Representative Hill, I think that would be a really good question to ask the department when they're up here.
Thank you. Representative Hill, follow up? Okay. Representative Keeler.
Thank you, Chair. I just have kind of a general question because this is an education thing, but it involved food, right? And so there's these, we often work in legislature in very siloed areas. And so I guess my question is when you do this in any of your investigations or when you look at things, like at what point do you consider bringing in another agency to see if there was any fraud or mismanagement or misapproval, because in this specific instance, this conversation lands in many tables. So I'm just wondering, like, how do you then, or at what point do we ever look at, are there other agencies that could have played a role in any of the work that you do, and when do we bring those into these sorts of reports?
Ms. Dyson or Ms. Randall, which one wants to?
Madam Chair, Representative Keeler, the subject or the oddity in a report is going to be driven by, you know, well, especially if it's about a program, like if we're doing a special review about a program or a specific instance, it's going to be driven by which entity is responsible for overseeing the program. So in this case, MDE was responsible for overseeing that program.
Representative Keeler.
Thank you. It's more of a general question, right? Like, not like I understand this incident, but I'm thinking about like many of the other things we legislate over have jurisdictions in many different committees and different agencies. Like, we just, like, I can name a bunch, but I'm more just thinking big picture. When there is an issue that's happening and it's so much bigger than just one agency, I understand that there's usually like an oversight agency, but we're working in like partnering and trying to break down silos. And so I'm more just thinking like, thinking in the future, how do we make sure that, like, if there's another agency that was a partner in this, that we're also looking at those agencies as well?
Ms. Randall.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Keeler, for the question. Of course, it varies, right, depending on the questions we're asked and what we're looking at. But I'll use as an example a report we released 2 years ago on the oversight of grants to nonprofit organizations, right? That's something that almost every state agency does. And so when we are asked to look at, you know, how does the state manage grants, right? That's a huge question that spans every committee you might serve on. So we do a couple of different things. So one, we picked a sample of agencies to go deep on so that we can use that. We also look at the entity that's responsible in Minnesota for oversight of grants or for grants policies, and that's the Office of Grants Management at the Department of Administration. We also do things like survey every state agency that had a member on the State Grants Oversight Council, right? So we hear from folks across all the agencies. We also look for that report. What we did is we had done decades worth of siloed evaluations on how is grants management in this agency? Oh, there's a bunch of problems. How is it in this program? Oh, so then what we did actually is almost like a meta-analysis of our own work. We then looked back and said, okay, look at these trends that we're seeing across all of these agencies, across all of these reports, and then we look at best practices, and so then we pulled it all together. So I would say we really kind of follow the question, we follow the data. The legislature has been really generous in giving us strong authority to get the information we need wherever it may be, and so that's where we go.
Representative Keeler?
No follow-up. Thank you for letting me take the time to ask the general question, and just to verify, we're not holding you back. The legislature is not holding you back in engaging in other agencies if needed. Okay. That's it. Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
You're welcome. Anybody else? Okay. Well, I want to thank both Ms. Randall and Ms. Dyson. We sure appreciate your work and your thoroughness. I don't know how you do it all. I'm glad you're doing it and not me. And I bet we all feel the same. But we appreciate this information and all the material you've given us. Well, thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
So now we'll, is the commissioner in here? And anybody, MDE, who'd like to come and join him? All right. Well, welcome, and Commissioner Jett, welcome to the committee. Thank you for being here, and go ahead and introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your comments.
Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Willie Jett, and I have the privilege to serve as the Commissioner of Education for our great state of Minnesota. I appreciate the opportunity to comment on the Office of the Legislative Auditor's Special Review of the Minnesota Department of Education's oversight of the nonprofit organization Feeding Our Future. And with me here today is our General Counsel, Ms. Maren Holden, and our Director of Government Relations, Mr. Adosh Uni. The situation with Feeding Our Future was a travesty, a coordinated, brazen effort abuse of nutrition program meant to ensure access to healthy meals for low-income children. This is not a victimless crime. The children and families who benefit from these programs are the ones who were left behind. The responsibilities for this flagrant fraud lie squarely with the indicted and convicted fraudsters. And we are hopeful that accountability and justice for this fraud will be served. I would like to acknowledge the thorough and collaborative process undertaken by the OLA in reviewing the department's oversight of federal nutrition programs. And as I shared last summer when this report was released, we value the detailed attention given to our practices and approach, such reviews as valuable tools for continuous improvement. Our agency is committed to maintaining program integrity and ensuring robust fiscal oversight of our programs, which serve children across the state. Importantly, our agency did not wait for this report to take action. We have proactively implemented changes over the past several years to enhance program oversight and integrity. And this includes actions we have taken both before and after the release of the report last summer. This special review validates many of our own observations over the past 2 years as we sought to learn from this experience and build safeguards to prevent future issues. As a continuous improvement organization, the Department of Education has taken numerous steps to strengthen our oversight capabilities. MDE is eager to discuss with all of you what the department has done to implement the OLA's recommendations and other steps MDE has taken to strengthen our overall oversight of programs and to ensure our agency effectively detects and prevents fraud, waste, and abuse. As you know, the federal criminal trial started just last week, and with opening statements and testimony starting yesterday, including one of our own employees. We're going to take great care today to ensure that what is said here today does not impact the success of the ongoing trial. As prosecutors work to secure justice for this unprecedented fraud. Our efforts, including reporting to the federal law enforcement, has led to 70 criminal indictments. Over 30 individuals have now pleaded guilty to charges such as wire fraud and other financial crimes, and 5 individuals tried in federal court have been found guilty on most charges. I know that, like you all, we are committed to getting results, delivering for students and families, accountability, preventing fraud, and cracking down on crime. As a continuous improvement agency, the Department of Education has independently implemented several changes to strengthen our oversight capabilities, ensure program funds are used as intended, and root out fraud, waste, and abuse. We have established an Office of Inspector General at the Department of Education, reporting directly to me as the commissioner. Since its inception, the Department of Education's OIG has received approximately 140 complaints overall, of which 80 are closed and 60 are open investigations. The OIG is almost fully staffed. It recruited and hired highly trained staff. The decades of experience within the OIG team is extraordinary and shows that the office is prepared to take on incredibly complex fraud investigations. The OIG has established and implemented a framework for handling complaints and conducting investigations that follows the principles and standards for offices of Inspector General. The office has also created and implemented a temporary case tracking system to record complaints and associated information. The OIG has created strong relationships with the law enforcement to effectively collaborate and cooperate on investigations or prosecutions. To date, collaboration has included the Federal United States Department of Education's Office of Inspector General, the Minnesota Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, and the Department of Human Services, that's just to name a few. We also established a general counsel at the agency and have built out the team over the past 3 years. With legal support, our program areas are constantly evaluating their enforcement tools and authorities and consulting regularly with our legal team to ensure that they are maximizing their use of regulatory enforcement actions. And this can result in, for example, refusing reimbursements under grants for unallowable expenditures, denying applications for program participation based on accounting and audit concerns, or making referrals to OIG and law enforcement partners when appropriate. We've also strengthened our oversight by updating our fraud reporting policy and providing agency-wide training on fraud detection and prevention, securing funds from the legislature, thank you, to support risk management and an additional auditor in the school finance division, contracting with a national firm, MH Miles, to conduct in-depth finance reviews of certain community nutrition sponsors, by investing millions into our cyberlinked interactive child nutrition system, technology system, to provide updates and improvements, and further increasing MDE's oversight tools in state statute for CACFP and SFSP programs. Now, within days of my appointment as commissioner in January of 2023, I convened the department's leadership to understand what happened with Feeding Our Future, what we learned, and what safeguards we needed to implement. One of my first actions was to come before the House and the Senate, sharing my approach oriented towards accountability and continuous improvement. Department of Education has been intentional and focused on accountability, seeking agency-wide solutions. And so we do this not just to address our past mistakes, but to prevent future issues, ensuring program integrity and strong fiscal oversight. I believe we've come a long way since I joined the Department of Education in 2023, and we are in it for the long haul. This requires responsible investments, accountability, and constant improvement. That's why we are asking for new tools to boost the effectiveness of oversight. We have and we will continue to improve our oversight and to work to prevent, detect fraud, waste, and abuse in partnership with the legislature. In 2024, we changed the OIG statute to ensure the office has the needed authority to conduct investigations, such as clarifying OIG authority to access records and the power to subpoena records. In 2025, the governor is proposing critical resources and steps to strengthen the department's anti-fraud work. And this includes positions within MDE's Office of General Counsel to support in nutrition programs and charter oversight to prevent and stop fraud. An additional investigator in the OIG to support the volume of investigations already underway. For charter school oversight and procurement policy improvements and food service program integrity components. We are also proposing additional legislative enhancements for our OIG, including protections for reporters, maintaining confidentiality of active investigations, including theft in the activity under the OIG's jurisdiction to investigate, and clarifying and ensuring transparency in what conduct constitutes fraud, waste, and abuse. So I would like to thank Auditor Randall and Catherine Tyson, Director of Special Reviews, for their team's work on this special review. The OLA's recommendations have been extremely helpful, and we have taken action. And I would just like to share a few of those with you. We are moving forward with the additional legislative proposals for increased oversight of the nutrition programs. We are taking additional steps to verify information provided in support of sponsorship applications that are submitted by high-risk applicants through a variety of strategies. We are conducting follow-up reviews from both administrative reviews and serious deficiencies, and these reviews have proven extremely helpful. We are placing additional emphasis on program integrity when we are considering waivers. And lastly, we are making various updates to complaint investigation procedures. And so the department, we look forward to continuing work already underway to make the necessary changes outlined in the report to ensure Minnesota remains the best state in the country for children to grow up in. As the commissioner, I remain committed to doing what's right by kids. And I mean that again by what's right by kids first and foremost. So thank you. And we stand ready for questions from the committee.
Thank you, Commissioner. We do already have a list going here. I'll start with Representative Lawrence.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Commissioner, and everyone else who's joined in. I appreciate your comments and your commentary as far as what steps have been taken. And so thank you for that and bringing that to us today as well. But I do have came with a few different questions as well. And so, and I'm just going to start out. In December of 2020, the MDA entered into a voluntary stipulation agreement with Feeding Our Future to approve or deny meal site applications in a timely manner and to promote technical, provide technical assistance and to any applications that were provided. And something that you may, or I'm sure you're familiar with and with the testimony they've heard. A fear of future use the stipulation agreement as a legal leverage against the MDA in the ensuing months of the civil case, which we've discussed a little bit here. My question is, who negotiated the stipulation agreement? And did the Attorney General advise MDA to sign that stipulation agreement?
Chair, members, I will turn that to our legal resident.
Ms. Holden. Holden.
Thank you, Chair Bennett, Representative Lawrence.
Yep. Two
responses here. First, as the commissioner noted, there is a federal trial currently underway prosecuting Feeding Our Future's former executive director, Amy Bach. And at this point, we are not going to say anything in this hearing today that could potentially impact those proceedings, which includes a lot of kind of what MDE did or did not do at the time, which are issues that, if you've seen some of the reporting on the trial, are really quite central to the arguments in the trial. We would be happy to kind of speak to that when the trial is complete. We also think the report speaks to these pieces, not necessarily to your question, which I will get to, and that the, you know, Auditor Randall and Ms. Tyson did an excellent job explaining the report. Another piece on your question is that kind of who the ins and outs of how a legal stipulation was negotiated. I wasn't here at the time, so, but would likely also be subject by attorney-client privilege and likely wouldn't be something that the commissioner or we would speak to in a public hearing. But thank you for the question.
Okay. Well, it's a question I had, so.
Representative Lawrence.
Right, Madam Chair.
Yeah.
Madam Chair, sorry. Yeah, question I had and a couple more follow-up. And I appreciate you just sharing the answers that you have for it, so thank you. Madam Chair, Commissioner, in addition to that, in January 2021, MDA advised the court that Feeding Our Future was in material breach of contract, yet the MDA failed to make serious efforts to terminate any of the nutrition program contracts with Feeding Our Future. And so my question is, follow up with the beginning there, why didn't MDE follow through and use material breach of contract to terminate Feeding Our Future's participation in the federal nutrition programs?
Madam Chair, Madam Chair, members, I will turn that over to our general counsel, Ms. Holden.
Ms. Holden.
Chair Bennett, Representative Lawrence, I might sound repetitive today. This, I think, probably also falls into the category of things that we're going to be cautious about speaking to. But I will note that when it comes to legal proceedings, whether that one or there is an ongoing civil matter, that much of this is also in the public record. And so if you're curious now, much of it can be found there. But again, we'd be happy to speak in more detail about things that we can speak to without breaching attorney-client privilege once the current trial is over.
Okay. Madam Chair.
One comment, Representative Lawrence, before. And yep. Ms. Holden, is it? It would be nice to get some written. I'm understanding you can't speak publicly to those things right now, but having a written response would be nice. Is that something that you would be able to do, after this committee hearing?
Likely, yes. I think there might be some of the questions we still probably wouldn't offer responses to, given attorney-client privilege, as they specifically relate to like MDE's litigation choices in ongoing litigation or previous litigation. But I think we'd be happy to consider written responses to questions that we think we can answer.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Lawrence.
Good, Madam Chair. And so for the record, these will be in. So if there's a chance in the near future, we could see a response in a month or two maybe, correct? And sorry, I got a couple more.
Okay, Representative Lawrence.
Madam Chair, Commissioner, the MDE and even the Governor Waltz falsely claimed that the MDE was ordered by the courts to continue payments to sponsor meal sites, which we saw there was many issues with or testified earlier today. According to the court, including the administered by the judge, MDE was never precluded from issuing a stop payment in that scenario. The courts did indicate that if MDA were to issue a stop payment, that MDA would need a reason to stop payments. It seems to me that fraud or unsubstantiated reimbursement claims would certainly be a good reason to stop payments. Why did MDA never force the issue on trying to stop payments and make suspicious meal distribution sites prove they were serving the number of meals being served?
Madam Chair.
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, members. Again, I'm going to turn to our general counsel, Ms. Holden.
Ms. Holden.
Chair Bennett, Representative Lawrence, you might be able to tell how much I would love to get into detail with you about this. But again, we're going to be quite cautious of protecting the integrity of the federal criminal trial. That one thing that I think we are speaking to is about the legislature's creation of an Office of Inspector General, which established for MDE a tool and the ability to conduct investigations, including administrative and criminal investigations, which is not an office and a power and a tool that we had before the establishment of that office.
Sure. And Madam Chair, and I just we had testimony earlier as far as we were going through the study and the report that brought that very question to the forefront as well, as was testified to. Madam Chair, Commissioner, MDA claims they tried to stop the fraud, yet the fraud continued, and Feeding Our Future simply grew more brazen, and I take this event, because over the course of more than 20 months of protracted civil legal battle with Feed Our Future, never once from what can be seen in the court records as MDA advised the court it had reason to suspect fraud or inflated unsubstantiated meal reimbursement requests from Feed Our Future. Did MDA ever advise the court in their civil defense that the agency had reason to believe that certain meal distribution sites were not serving the number of meals being claimed for reimbursement? Did MDA ever raise the specter of fraud or impropriety in the process? I suspect I know
what
the answer
is. Should I just say Ms. Holden?
Thank you, Chair Bennett, Representative Lawrence. Again, you know, what MDE did or did not do or thought at the time are really central issues to the federal criminal trial. So we'd be happy to discuss this, once that trial is concluded.
Okay.
Representative Lawrence.
Madam Chair.
Want to try again?
Thank you. I just have one follow-up question, and the final question I have today, and one I just want to say, did your, and it's going to be probably the same answer, did you advise your legal team or the Attorney General you had suspicions of fraudulent activity by nonprofits that would also have been under the oversight of the Attorney General's Charitable Services Division?
Ms. Holden.
Thank you, Chair Bennett, Representative Lawrence. Another, the same as far as kind of ongoing trials, but again, that's a question too that probably like ventures somewhat into the possible category of attorney-client privilege. But thank you. These are excellent questions.
Yeah. Madam Chair, just to wrap up, and Commissioner, I want to just thank you for being here today and the team for coming, the testimony and the report from what we've experienced over the last few years and the documentation we have. I really appreciate that. I know that we have this ongoing trial, but I wanted questions in the record so that at some point we could get some more detailed answer to some of these questions that are before us. And I appreciate the testimony you gave as far as the steps that have been taken at this point in time. So thank you.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just thank you both for being here, Commissioner, and for the Auditor's Office, too, as well. This is really good information. I just want to, I concur with my colleague, Rep. Jordan, about fraud being wrong. So fraud is wrong. It hurts individuals. It's unfair. And I really appreciate the progress that we're making, and I do know that we have steps in place and need more work to do, and we have a ways to go there. So I appreciate that. I also, Chair, want to just acknowledge your acknowledgement that Commissioner Jett joined in 2023, mm-hmm. So post that. So I think that's a really important piece of this conversation that we can't keep our eye off of. So I have two questions. One is, can you share a little bit about MDE and how you partner with other agencies to prevent fraud and kind of improve integrity, and how you collaborate with the other state agencies and how we're doing that work? Any insight on that, Commissioner?
Okay. Chair and members, and so you talked about the interagency, and it's of utmost importance. One of the things, and I do want to make sure I get this on record to say, that MDE is serious about results. We are about accountability. We are committed to preventing fraud and cracking down on crime. And one of the things I would just want to say is people ask, what is going on now? And so, again, I Ms. Holden said, that we are actively enforcing new accountability standards and strengthening compliance measures and ensuring transparency in all funding decisions. And I appreciate you talking about me beginning in 2023. And so what I'll say is from my first day as commissioner, I prioritized this open, transparent communication with the governor's office and other stakeholders. With that being said, the interagency collaboration, it's a priority for everyone here. Okay, we know that strong partnerships and coordination with other agencies are key to combating fraud. And while we're already forging this interagency partnership focused on preventing and detecting fraud, we also know that a more formalized structure will help us in the future. And so some of this important enterprise coordination is included in the governor's anti-fraud package. Ms. Holden, were you trying to add something? Nope, that was it. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Representative Green?
Yes, one more question. Thank you, Madam Chair. Can you share a little bit about the process of when you bring on new partners and what that vetting looks like? So if you decide, like, okay, this is a group that we want to work with at MDE, what does that look like?
Commissioner.
Madam Chair and members, I'm going to turn that over to our legal resident here, Ms. Holden.
Ms. Holden.
Chair Bennett, Representative Green, can I ask a clarifying question?
Absolutely.
When you say new partners, do you mean kind of program participants that would be like grantees or kind of fund recipients, or more the interagency partners that you were referencing in your last question?
I was meaning more, Madam Chair, I was meaning more the grant groups that we give money to. But I consider them partners.
Ms. Holden.
Thank you.
Chair Bennett, Representative Green, that's a great question. And one of the, the process is involved, but a lot of the details of the process really depend on what the program is and what kind of the funds are. So many of the funds that MDE is responsible for distributing are funds that you all have appropriated to go to schools and districts and charters, for whether it's for per pupil aid or one of the other sources. And so then those recipients are like their own governmental entities if it's a district, right? Or a nonprofit if it's a charter. And so they're kind of, you all determine what the requirements are for those entities. We administer other programs like the nutrition program, where the federal regulations are really, really detailed and very, very involved about what is required both of sponsors, which are the entities, as Ms. Tyson outlined, that that the regulations set out to directly kind of oversee the sites, and then also site requirements. We also, you know, do the 21st century after school programming. And so we have grantees that receive federal funds that we administer for after school programming. And again, those regulations, and that's actually also in statute too, are really clear about what is required for those grantees. I think one of the, not to go on too long, but like one of the exciting things that we are doing that I think you kind of referenced is that we are many years into the process of utilizing and kind of for a grant management software that allows us to see all of the grants funding that are going out and kind of also the program participation of those grantees all in one place for our agency finance, which is a really great program integrity tool because it allows us to see patterns over time.
Madam Chair, members, I'd like to ask Mr. Uni to add.
Mr. Uni.
Madam Chair, members, for the record, my name is Dosh Uni. I'm the Director of Government Relations in the Minnesota Department of Education. Knowing this is a policy committee, I will delve a little bit into kind of agency finance space. So one of the initial things we do for named grantees or even competitive grantees is we acquire all of the required financial data like 990s. And then what we do when if there's a named grantee or a competitive awardee that we do is we set up a work plan. So they have to set up a spending plan, programming plan that aligns with the purposes of the grant. Our teams, and this is why it's so critical for us to have administrative support to oversee any type of grants or funds that we put out, they work with the team to be able to make sure that the purpose of the plan that the grantee has laid out matches what the legislature has set out as expectations for the grant. After that, the grants work on a reimbursement basis, and so the grantees make the expenditures. They prove to the department that the expenditures they made are in line with the work plan. And then once we can cross the T's and dot the I's in terms of going it through our process, then we can flow out the reimbursement to the grantees.
Great. Thank you so much for that answer.
Representative Green, follow up at all? Okay. That's we have and Representative Falconer is next, and then Representative Keeler.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair, Commissioner. Also, just thank you for the folks from OLA coming to the presentation. Very insightful, a lot of good information there. And just wanted to acknowledge, thank you for your commitment to the, our children, getting results, as you said. You have the from OLA, the recommendations. I'm just wondering what we're doing now in absence of, you know, future legislation stemming from from the recommendations. What are you doing now to prevent waste, fraud, theft within the department?
Madam Chair.
Commissioner.
Members. And so you're asking what we're doing now. So here's what's going on now. We are reviewing all grant applications under new fraud protection or new fraud prevention guidelines and enhancing interagency coordination to detect fraud early. What I do want to emphasize is providing relevant facts and context are not necessarily the same thing as making excuses or deflecting blame. And I think it's important to remind us all that our actions have been praised and validated by the FBI and the United States Attorney's Office time and time again. And so you said, what have I done? I prioritized the OIG and fraud prevention work from day one as the commissioner. And as you've heard in my testimony, we are seeing results. We have been able to move forward with additional legislative proposals for this increased oversight of the nutrition programs. We have been able to take additional steps to verify information provided in support of sponsorships, sponsorship applications that are submitted by high-risk applicants through a variety of strategies. And we have been able to conduct follow-up reviews from both administrative reviews and serious deficiencies. And so these reviews have proven extremely helpful, and all of these are strengthening the department's oversight capabilities.
Thank you, Commissioner. Representative Falconer, follow up. Okay. And Representative Keeler, you're okay? You're passing. Okay. Representative Mueller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Hopefully this question will not be under the I can't answer a question because of legal reasons. I'm going off of the OLA report. The very first recommendation was that the legislature should establish criteria and statute given the MDE the authority to conduct rulemaking to establish that criteria, or we are as legislators supposed to make that rulemaking. Madam Chair, I'm actually incredibly concerned about this recommendation because given the fact that there had already been requirements ahead of time, requirements were set out, they were not followed. This is during a time where they had all the money in the world to do all the administration. Mr. Uni told us that this is why it's so important that we have more money to do our administrative report, and yet we were flooded with cash during COVID. There were requirements that were already set up, and yet the agency, our department, didn't follow them. And the recommendation is that either we make some sort of criteria or that we allow them rulemaking. I am very concerned about letting MDE being their own rulemaking. So my question is, Commissioner, you said that you are prepared to give us recommendations of how new legislation should be written to prevent something like this to happen. What is new legislation that you're hoping to bring forth to us, specific legislation that you're hoping to bring forth to us that actually, A, would have prevented this, or it wasn't in place so it actually perpetuated this fraud, meaning you weren't able to stop it because this legislation wasn't in place before now. What specific legislation was not in place that would have prevented this or prevented you from taking action before now? Madam Chair.
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, members, and so I'm going to depend on our legal counsel, Ms. Maren Holden.
Ms. Holden.
Chair Bennett, Representative Mueller, I think that you asked an answerable question. So,
Winner!
I think there are a few pieces here. Okay, so one is, and this is all legal public record, so is that a piece of the picture here that the report does mention is that in 2016 there was a sponsor that applied to be a sponsor, and MDE at the time denied the sponsor application for concerns about financial viability, and the Minnesota Court of Appeals in 2017 said that MDE didn't have the authority under the existing federal regulations to deny that sponsor's application based on the financial viability criteria that MDE was imposing, noting that MDE didn't have rulemaking authority, but as if it was essentially trying to impose those as if they should be rules. So I think that's where some of the idea of the rulemaking suggestion has come from. But to kind of the meat of your question, I think that the big piece really is the establishment of the OIG, because the OIG gives MDE the authority and the tools to investigate and take action against fraud. Whereas many of our program areas when it comes to grants and funds are set up in more of a technical assistance framework, where that the programs are set up where you are supposed to, as the agency, tell entities when they haven't done something well and give them a chance to fix it and give them another chance to fix it and give them another chance to fix it. And you know, you're a program expert in after school programming. That doesn't mean that you know how to, or certainly have the access to be able to prove that funds are not being used for their intended purpose. So a big change is the OIG, which gives us, and thank you for the 2023 establishment and the 2024 enhancements, which really expanded and clarified both the investigatory and the sanctions authorities in the OIG, that I think that's a big piece of it. I will say that you will likely see this session yet some additional proposals to statute in the areas of our nutrition oversight. I think our legislative auditor colleagues mentioned that in 2023, you enacted at our proposal some financial viability criteria to go directly into statute. We'll see some administrative for the other performance standards, like as far as administrative oversight and program accountability, pieces around adding additional sponsor criteria, such as like capping a 25% growth rate in sites each year, requirements for nonprofit board of directors, requirements for reasonable salaries for executive positions. That's just a high-level bullet point, but of some of the things that we are interested in putting into statute to make sure that we have somewhere the legal authority to impose those criteria, which we think are important for the program.
Representative Mueller.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for that. I know that it was a really good thing for us to have the OIG in there, and I know that one of the proposals that we have on the majority side here is to create kind of an Office of Inspector General that would bring all of them together and make sure that we're, you know, auditing to the best of our ability all of our agencies. So my question, and this is me just mostly in ignorance, trying to understand the job description of the OIG. My concern is, you know, I'm excited to have this independent, you know, internal control, but if it seems as if there were warning signs ahead of time, and how are we going to keep the agency accountable for making sure that they're following those recommendations? So you're talking about putting in, hey, we're going to make sure that we have more oversight, we're going to put more recommendations, more requirements, and all those things. That's great. I find that fantastic. But it doesn't matter if the agency simply doesn't follow that. And we're seeing from the report that there were measurements, there were requirements, there were warning signs of, hey, if this is happening, you shouldn't, you know, approve of this, and yet they still were approved. So my question is, thank you, Madam Chair, for your indulgence, is does the OIG then hold the agency accountable for you didn't follow your own recommendations and your own requirements for this? Thank you, Madam Chair.
Commissioner, you want to take that one?
Madam Chair, members, I'm going to turn that to General Counsel, Ms. Holden.
Ms. Holden.
Chair Bennett, Representative Mueller, I'm so glad that you asked this, because I think it picks up on something that the commissioner said in his opening remarks, which is that there are two distinct roles that of oversight that I think you've hit on. The OIG is kind of the yikes, this is a big problem. We're really concerned about, like, fraud, about possible crimes, about misuse of funds. But as you're pointing out, kind of well before that, what are our program areas doing to utilize the regulatory tools that they're entrusted with? And I think that where it gets tricky is that what lawyers wouldn't exist as a profession if all words meant the same thing to everybody, right? And so when you look at a set of rules or regulations, whether it's federal rules or state law, and what a state agency can or must do is often open to interpretation. And so that's why you heard the commissioner talk about why you'll see in the governor's fraud prevention proposals, honestly, more lawyers. And that's what we've been able to do with MDE establishing the Office of General Counsel, is to be able to really sit with our program areas and look at the regulatory ground base of their authorities and give them advice, which I won't get into the detail, but give them advice about how to, as the commissioner said, maximize their use of regulatory tools. And that's not in any way a comment on what has been done before, because we're not commenting today on what we did during this specific time period. But I think that you have picked up on kind of the two big prongs of MDE's overarching approach here, which is to both make sure that our program areas, when they're doing their day-to-day work, are getting great legal advice about how to maximize their regulatory enforcement role. And then we have the, you know, kind of the OIG to call in and to refer things to when the issues that our folks are seeing exceed the tools that are available to them.
Representative Mueller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just one comment to follow up. I would hope, Commissioner Jett, as I've just been had this explained to me, and thank you very much, that if you are finding in any statute that is preventing you to do that, that you would come to us and make that recommendation. I think this is one of those philosophical things that we're going to have to really grapple with. The purpose of the MDE to be able to remember when you have your mission shift. It just feels like when things get so big, bureaucracy gets so big and trying to do so many things, that this creates gaps that we're now trying to, oh man, we have too many things that we're trying to focus on. This is why on this side of the aisle, we try so hard to say, keep administrating of these funds at the most local level so we can actually see and keep it accountable instead of in a bureaucracy labyrinth that gets lost. It is MDE's purview to make sure that people are being held accountable, and I think that's important. But I think that's also most important for us to remember it's our job to keep MDE accountable. And so if we need to look at how these requirements are written, make sure they're more concrete, more measurable goals, more measurable requirements, then that's something that we need to talk about, because open to interpretation is not helpful when taxpayers are seeing millions of dollars go off in fraud. And I know that's what it is, and that's no comment on what has happened before with Olay or anything that's happened, but open to interpretation is not comforting to people who didn't receive their services because people are buying luxury houses. It's not comforting to them. And so if we need to figure out how to make it, I don't know, easier to follow, because then it's not open to interpretation, then us as legislators, we need to be able to do that. Thank you, Madam Chair, for my indulging questions.
And Commissioner, I know there wasn't a question in there, but did you have any comments, or you just want to leave that as a comment?
Madam Chair, members, didn't necessarily have a comment, but a thank you, because we all have the same shared goal here as it relates to this moment in time that we're talking about and discussing.
Thank you. Representative Keeler.
Yeah, I kind of just have a bigger question about food and kids in general, because I know that we have the new DCYF, like we partnered off with that. That kind of leans into where some of my first questions were coming from, is that DCYF now does all of our food insecurity things. There are food components in your department. Can you tell us how you are making sure? Because feeding our kids, like I talk a lot about feeding our kids. If we're hangry, we can't learn, and feeding our kids is really, really important. And so, I'm really concerned about breaking down the silos with different agencies and making sure that they're working really good together to do what is right for our communities. So Commissioner and team, can you explain to us how you're partnering with DCYF when it comes to the food services that you're providing or the food access, addressing food insecurities for Minnesota youth?
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, members, and thank you for the question. And you get back to that interagency collaboration, but you started out by talking about meals. Okay, and so I just want to get specific. Meals, and people ask us that question. It's been out there, whether I'm speaking at MASA or AMSD or MREA. I know I'm using different acronyms, and that some of those are from all across the state. But what I wanted to emphasize is that the question that was out there, or that has been out there, people have asked us about free school meals and the advantages of that. Okay, and so I'm just going to go there for a minute, if that's okay. And so what I will say is this program keeps students fed and focused on learning. And you were talking about angry or hangry. I think that's the word that you used. And so what I'm going to reiterate with that is that research shows that hungry students struggle academically. They have lower attendance, and they experience higher behavioral issues. And I've been in education kind of a long time. Don't tell anybody that, but kind of a long time. And so whether I was a teacher, whether I was a coach, whether I was a principal, a superintendent, this was one of the things I always kind of paid attention to. And as educators, if you're in a room, the day that you didn't give somebody a candy bar, help them with lunch, something of that nature, or breakfast, it's something that we all experience. And so what I wanted to say is investing in school and investing in kids eating in school, it's something that aids student success. And I also want to say somebody one time said, are we dumping money into a failing program? And so I just want to say from my experience, from my feeling, no, that is not the case. And I'm going to get to that hangry part. And so eating meals at school and fewer kids going hungry, to me, that's a measurable success for here for the state of Minnesota. You got specific in terms of how we're partnering with DCYF, and that's something that's intricate, something that's sometimes complicated. And when you're doing certain things, it takes you're doing stuff and refining with the fine tooth comb. And so what I want to say is that's ongoing. Okay, so there's not in terms of a specific answer, that's an ongoing moment.
Representative Keeler.
Just a follow up and more of just a statement. I think we lose our ability to be effective and efficient when we cross silos into different agencies. And so just want to make sure that as you're having those conversations, and I'm happy to join you in any conversation when it comes about like food insecurities, but just making sure that we're efficient as we can be with providing the food that we need for kids, that we're not overlapping things, missing spaces, or creating more gaps for harm. That's it. I know that you're doing really good work. I also know that you did come to our committee and appreciate your open and honest approach in realigning where this entire agency is going. And so your leadership with that has been great. And I really appreciate the ongoing conversations that we've had about other areas in this work. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
You're welcome, Representative Bierman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Commissioner, for being here today. One thing you had said early on, I just wanted to follow up and kind of get a number to this. You said that the OIG was almost fully staffed, and I'm just wondering how many staff members make up the OIG at the department, if you have that number close.
Commissioner or Mr. Ooney or Ms. Holden?
So, Madam Chair, members, and so we're pulling out a document to make sure that we give you specifics in terms of that. So our general counsel, she's looking at a document, but she's also refining. So
sure.
Can we come back to that one?
Yeah.
Okay.
And the just a
Representative Bierman.
Follow up. Some of what, since I waved my hand to talk, has come out already, but the vein of this authority to do the work that you need to do, and it was mentioned a few times by folks, to just make sure that that work is being done. That's really important to all of us here at the table. And I just want to reiterate that I feel the same way as Representative Mueller, that if there are things we can do to strengthen your hand to make sure this work is getting done, I would appreciate knowing that. You did mention some things as you spoke, so I got to get a vein of what you have to do. But the last question I have is just, and you might have to get back to me on this too, is how many sites do you serve in the state of Minnesota at this time? And if you want to follow up, that's fine as well.
Commissioner?
Madam Chair and members, and so when you say how many sites, I'm getting specific, if you're talking about how many districts, how, I mean, sites,
the terminology. I'm talking about sites where you, where food is delivered through the department to children, which is, you know, really a, you know, a growing issue still today, this hunger that we talk about and making sure that kids are fed. I just wonder, you know, how many active sites there are, and with compare that to the number of staff you have, because it's a lot of monitoring. I know in healthcare they have inspections and monitoring that has to be done, and the only way to do that is go out there physically, and it takes quite a staff to do that when you're looking at 300 or 500 or 800 sites in a year. So appreciate some information back on that when you're able.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Commissioner, is that something you want to provide later?
Madam Chair, members, yes, that's something that we can get you in writing so we get specifics for you.
Excellent. And, okay, so we have Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just want to echo what Commissioner Jett said about this fraud that happened. He used the word travesty. And he also said we need to do what's right by kids. And I was actually going to ask the same question that Representative Mueller asked. So that is kind of the question on everyone's mind. So I hope we will have time to hear these proposals from MDE regarding what their plan is around staffing the OIG and around just general ways to make the improvement better. Do you, Madam Chair, anticipate that we will be hearing MDE's proposals around fraud or around their recommendations for either their policy bill?
I would anticipate that we would, yes. I think that's, it's a very important topic, so.
I agree. So I'm glad that we can continue this conversation. And just again to reiterate, we need to do what's right by kids, which is also something that I heard you say very loudly and clearly, Commissioner, and I think we can all agree that that's right, and we can all live with that as our guiding principle in this committee. Thank you.
Thank you.
And that ends our questions here by members. I actually have a couple of questions, if you're okay, on this. I think I'll ask questions that you could answer. And Commissioner, just to preface this, I know that this is before your time, all these things took place, and I really appreciate the work that you are doing, you know, you're all doing right now too. It's like an improvement plan, you know, in our classrooms for our students, not calling you all students, but that's what we do in education. So I guess one of my questions is, can you tell the committee how many, if any, MDE staff were either, you know, fired or demoted or transferred or otherwise disciplined for kind of dereliction of duty? And so I'm just curious if you have any numbers on that in this particular Feeding Our Future situation where processes weren't followed. Was there any discipline activities that took place?
So, Madam Chair, members, I just want to reiterate, and I think, again, I've said this, I feel like I've repeated this over and over, in terms of we're serious about results, and we're definitely serious about preventing fraud and cracking down on crime. And I do want to say a lot has changed since 2020, and from my time as commissioner, yep, we have prioritized this open and transparent communication. To get specific, you're asking a question about, and many people here have different, they come from different fields, but you're asking an HR question? And I know that you're not getting specific with that, but that is something that I've been cautioned over and over to, in terms of discussing that with outside entities. Mm-hmm. And so I do want to turn that to our general counsel.
Thank you. And just to preface, I'm not getting specific, no names, but basically did any staff lose their jobs over this? Because obviously things were dropped. So that's my question. Thank you, Ms. Holden.
Chair Bennett, the commissioner has been well cautioned. That your question really gets at HR information and personnel data, which we can't share.
So you cannot share disciplinary matters. Is that the data that you can't share?
Chair Bennett, you're asking for like a specific basis or a reason, and mm-hmm. like we would consider that to be personnel data that we wouldn't share.
Okay. All right. And another question then I have is, can you confirm that MDE staff have now been trained in their legal obligations to report to the OHA any fraud? Because that is in statute. Is that something that they've already been trained on? Commissioner?
Madam Chair, members. And so that is something I mentioned earlier in my opening testimony. You're talking about our staff at MDE and going through training. And so, yes, our general counsel, our OIG department, we are constantly having conversation with our staff as it relates to this.
Excellent. Thank you. And then last question on my part. Have we, or has your department been able to claw back any of the funds that were lost through this fraud, if that's something you can answer? Have we been able to get any of this money back so we can utilize it and put it toward good use? Commissioner.
And so, Madam Chair, members, I do want to make sure that I answer this question in terms of when I say that we're serious about results. And so we do want every taxpayer dollar spent on students, not the fraudsters. And what I'll say is the courts are holding criminals responsible for this repayment. And with that, I need to turn that to our general counsel.
Ms. Holden.
Chair Bennett, right now the federal criminal proceedings are, through that process, they are seeking restitution. And so that's currently the mechanism for that to occur.
Thank you.
And I think there's been reporting on an amount, but I'm not sure what the current amount is.
Sure. Thank you. Well, Commissioner, thank you. Any final comments that you'd like to make?
Madam Chair, members, in terms of final comments, just that we're all on the same page or we all have the same goal in mind, making sure that the money or that it's not impacting students, that money goes where it's supposed to students and in the classroom. So just thank you for your diligence with that, and thank you to the OLA for a partnership with that.
Thank you, Commissioner, Ms. Holden, Mr. Uni, for being here. Appreciate that. And I will just echo that we're looking forward to working with you all to address these issues and give us the best Department of Education in the whole United States, right? And I appreciate your work. Members, with that, that concludes today's agenda. Our next meeting will be Wednesday, February 12th, and this committee stands adjourned.